Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Me not working hard. Yeah, right, picture that with a Kodak. Or better yet, go to Times Square, take a picture of me with a Kodak. Took my life from negative to positive, I just want y'all to know that. And tonight, let's enjoy life. Pitbull, Naya, Neo, that's right.
That was the beginning of Give Me Everything by Pitbull, featuring Neo, Afrojack, and Nayer, one of the top tracks requested by users of Spotify. And when the Swedish on-demand music site arrived in the U.S. last month, many music consumers celebrated the arrival of a service that allows you to listen to virtually any song legally, freely, and on demand for the first 6 months. After 6 months, you were capped at 10 free hours a month. But that limit didn't deter music fans. With more than 1.4 million free U.S. users in its first 3 weeks, Spotify is on track to surpass 20 million free U.S. users in its first year. But what is Spotify and what do other subscription music sites mean for the musicians themselves? Joining me now to talk about it is Elliot Van Buskirk, editor of Evolver.fm, which syndicates to Wired, Billboard, Gizmodo, and others. Elliot, welcome to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks.
Subscription music services have been around for years. Pandora, hugely popular, gets a lot of attention. What makes Spotify different?
In a way, I've been describing it as the good-looking Swedish cousin of Rhapsody. I like that one. I reuse that a bit. But it's true. We've had subscription services here for years. There are two things that make Spotify different. One is the time when it launched here. So right now we have apps that run on our smartphones, our tablets, our televisions just about, and then cars. And this obviates the need for all of that horrible DRM technology that made people hate subscription services for years. And without getting too much into it, it sort of penalized people for obeying the law and paying for their music. It made the music hard to deal with. Now that it's all on a smartphone and an app, it's easy.
Well, how is that different from Pandora, for example? Because if I'm listening to music on Pandora, I'm listening in the cloud. That is on their server, right?
Right. Pandora is the other kind of the other major type of sort of music service online, which is sort of akin to radio, where you can shape your channels, but you can't say, I want to hear this song right now. And that's what Spotify does, as do, Moog and Rhapsody and Napster and other services we've had here. The thing that makes Spotify really different, and the reason people like me were so excited to use this thing in the States. Actually, I've been using it already. Shh. I guess I'm not.
Because you can go on Swedish websites?
You can be a member of the press and be invited. But anyway, the thing that makes it different is, as you mentioned, this ability to use it for free for months and months, and then even after 6 months, you're still using it for free. We haven't had that before.
10 hours a month for free, even after 6 months. Seems to me a lot of people don't listen to any more music than that online.
Yeah, 10 hours is nothing to sneeze at. And I think they also have a 5 times per song limit. But the philosophy behind this, and I subscribe to this philosophy, is that a lot of the people that are using Spotify weren't paying for music anyway. So the question isn't really, are they ripping people off? It's like compared to zero. I mean, we're really starting at zero for a lot of music fans on recorded music expenditures.
All right, listeners, are you using Spotify in its first month in the States? Have you discovered it? Are you paying for it? I guess probably nobody's paying for it in this country yet because you get 6 months free, right?
Oh, you pay actually if you want to use it on your phone. See, this is why it's clever, right? You're at your computer. You're like, oh, this is so great.
Oh, you have to buy the app.
Right. Well, you buy the subscription and the app's actually free. But in order to use the app, in order to use it on anything except a computer, and this will come into play with televisions and cars, then you need to be a paying subscriber.
Oh, so that's key.
Yes.
Right? The difference between computers and mobile devices.
Exactly. So you're on the computer, you're getting addicted, you're making playlists for months and months. You're building these playlists. Why can't I take these playlists with me? Ah, you can. $10 a month.
$10 a month.
Yep.
Unlimited, $10 a month?
Yeah, as many as you want. I think it's 3,333 songs on an iPhone you can actually store and not even use your wireless plan.
All right, so I didn't give out the phone number. If you're a Spotify user, 212-433-WNYC, or any question you have about Spotify, for Elliot Van Buskirk, editor of Evolver.fm, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or use your old clunky desktop or your iPhone or whatever to post your question to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show or your comment about Spotify. So I guess this is where the musicians come in. It sounds almost too good to be true if it's $10 a month and the catalog is huge. You'll tell me if the catalog is huge. But if basically you can get anything, then, gosh, how much, you know, that you're going to download one album for $10.
Right.
How do the musicians get paid here?
Well, and this has always been a problem, regardless of how the money gets to the label. Sometimes it doesn't make it through the system. And this is not a problem that's, you know, that's specific to Spotify or any of these other digital music services. Spotify itself, you know, in their, when they're accused of not supporting artists, they point out they've spent over $100 million in payments to labels. In Sweden, they're the top revenue source of music labels. And in Europe, they're the second one behind iTunes. So if the same thing happens here, and the U.S. is a bigger music market, then that's going to be a lot of money. The number that I've heard, and you know, a lot, all of this is closed-door negotiations, but it seems like it's been about a penny per song. If you're an independent artist and you use TuneCore, and somebody listens to your song on, say, Moog, which is, uses MediaNet and TuneCore, so you get a penny if I play your song. And so if 20,000 people play your songs, you get $200, which doesn't sound like a ton. I mean, to get 20,000 plays is a lot. But compared to making nothing, you know, that's part of the question.
And is the how does it compare to the old, you know, pre-digital CD economy, or is that just too anachronistic a question to even matter?
I think if we do make it back to those days, it's going to take a while. My nitpick, I guess, with using the height of the CD as the benchmark of the record industry is that a lot of people were replacing previous formats during that time. So
old vinyl with CDs.
Yeah, and cassettes. It was all, both of those things were happening at the same time. So I think we were at sort of an artificially high watermark for a little while.
Kate on our Facebook page writes, I manage a classical record label, and our digital sales royalties far surpass our physical sales.
Excellent. I mean, that's what's starting to happen. And the costs are so much lower to distribute something digitally, obviously, that you hope that the artists are able to keep more of that money.
And Caesar on our Facebook page writes, the money you make from them amounts to nothing increasingly. I guess he's a musician. Recorded music has no financial value. It also seems to make people less connected to music and music artists in any deep way.
You know, this is, I mean, in a sense, it's like arguing with gravity. I mean, this is something that's happened, and the internet doesn't have any intentions for us. these are just like gravity doesn't want you to fall over. It's just sort of the nature of the beast. And I think, you know, my brother's in a band, and his band, he was very excited when he got a live tour manager, because it's all about connecting with the fans in a live setting, and that's where they make the bulk of their money. So he was more excited about that than actually being signed to a label.
More touring going on?
More touring.
Because you have to?
You have to work hard. You have to work really hard.
Yeah. But I don't know about failing to connect with music in any deep way. I mean, you know, gosh, I have people around me of all ages who are listening to music online and love and are passionate about their music.
Oh, and it's, there's so many ways to listen to music online. I mean, a lot of the apps that we're looking at go so far beyond the experience of holding a CD cover or an LP cover in your hand. You know, this experience that's lamented by traditionalist music fans. Well, I can't hold it in my hand. I can't look at it. Some of these apps, if you try the new Bjork app on the iPhone, I mean, tell me any album cover that you ever looked at while not under the influence of something and saw what you could see when you look at that, and get back to me.
Michelle in Hicksville, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just wanted to address the issue of, you know, how people say that it's not fair to the artists that their music is being, you know, streamed online and they're not getting paid for it, and a lot of artists might be upset over that. I know a couple of upcoming artists in Seattle, and I know that, you know, they're not really concerned with that because their music might be being streamed for free at, you know, websites like Spotify and Turntable. But in the end, whether that, you know, they might be making new fans, and that revenue might come back in the form of merchandise or tour tickets or buying albums from their website. So whether it be, you know, a couple of songs here and there that are being streamed for free, it might not be a huge concern for them because they're gaining new fans all over the world.
So there are a lot of unknowns, but they're not totally depressed about this.
Right.
Thank you. Fatya in Wilton, you're on WNYC in Connecticut. Hi.
Good morning. I was so happy to get the free subscription to Spotify. I got found out about it through my ASCAP membership. And as a songwriter, I was very happy to be able to find any songs I wanted. And I did this just last week, and I found some really great old Elton John songs that I haven't listened to in years. And then after hearing five songs, there was this an interminable commercial break. It was like this long, I don't know, you tell me, like a 3-minute Spotify commercial?
Commercial break?
Well, yes, there was a certain label executive who I won't mention on the air here, I don't remember her name, but she complained that Spotify didn't have annoying enough commercials when it was in Europe. And so why am I going to pay to remove the commercials if they're not annoying enough? So maybe this is part of that strategy.
Thank you. So free Spotify comes with commercials, and then you pay in part to bypass the commercial.
Exactly. And you also increase the audio quality and get to use the
Eric
apps.
In Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Eric.
Hi, good morning. You just said the reason I switched from paid Rhapsody to paid Spotify was they were the first service that claimed they had a 320 kilobits per second bit rate, which is about twice what other services are offering. So I'm one of these people that I'll pay for music, but I want higher fidelity, and online is certainly more convenient than buying hundreds of CDs.
So are you satisfied with the quality?
It's a little better than Rhapsody, I find. I find that otherwise it's almost the same. I do pay $10 for it. I was paying $10 a month for Rhapsody. There's some interface differences. I think that Spotify has some strengths and weaknesses.
Thank you. Miguel in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What you got? Real quick.
So, I had a question about the counter on Spotify. I know that in Europe, in some countries in Europe, Spotify introduced only 10 hours of listening a month. And I had an account that I opened when I was in Europe. When they started Spotify here, all of a sudden that counter disappeared on my window. Do you know if that's active in this country or what's up with that?
Huh.
Can he
get his 10 hours twice, I think, is the bottom line.
Oh, I see where you're going with that. I wouldn't want to venture a guess on that. That's a tough question.
Right. There are some artists not on Spotify. Here's one. The Unforgiven by Metallica, a band well known for its unforgiving opposition to digital music sharing. Some other big artists not on Spotify, the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, but we heard the subscription numbers. Do those big artists matter, and what's the barrier? We have 30 seconds.
You know, you can find those artists other places on the internet, on Amazon, iTunes, BitTorrent. I mean, I interviewed Lars Ulrich from Metallica, and he told me he BitTorrented his own album after his whole Napster debacle. So you can get that music and actually import it into Spotify if you want to fill in those gaps. Just for your personal Spotify, you can fill that stuff in. But I think it's only a matter of time until all of those artists will join these subscriptions, is my feeling.
10 seconds. Is the Songwriters Guild of America or anyone else trying to fight Spotify?
They can.
Or like our earlier caller who has the musician friends in Seattle, are they saying, well, maybe there's an upside to this?
You know, I think it's probably a good idea to be included. And artists today, they get such small amounts of money from a growing number of places, and I think that's the approach.
That music means we're out of time. Elliot Van Buskirk, editor of Evolver.fm. Great conversation. Thanks
so much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Talk to you tomorrow.